Welcome to Awaken Calls. Every Saturday, we host conversations with guest speakers from all walks of life. Speakers whose personal journeys awaken and inspire our innate spirit of service. Thank you for coming together to plant seeds for a more compassionate society.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. My name is Preeta, and I'll be your host for this week's Global Awaken Call. Welcome, and thank you for joining us. The purpose of these calls is really to share stories and to tell stories, stories that help plant seeds for a more compassionate society while fostering our own inner transformation. We do this by holding collective conversations with guest speakers from all walks of life, speakers who inspire us through their actions to live in a more service-oriented way. And behind each of these calls is an entire team of service-based volunteers whose invisible work allows us to hold the space. Today, our special guest speaker is none other than Alfred Tolle, someone who is really dedicating his life to today's theme of cultivating and connecting conscious leaders. Thanks again for joining today's call. Let's start with just a moment of silence to anchor ourselves. Thank you. Welcome again to our weekly Awaken Call. Today we're in conversation with Alfred Tolle. Here's roughly how the call works. In just a minute or so, I'm going to hand off to our remarkable moderator, Birju Pandya, who will engage in conversation with our speaker, Alfred Tolle. And later in the hour, or at the top of the next hour, we'll roll into reflections and sharing and possible questions, where we'll invite reflections and questions. I've opened up the queue right now, so at any point, you can hit *6 on your phone. And when we get to that time, you'll be prompted when it's your turn to speak. You can also email us at ask@servicebase.org. That's ask@servicebase.org for *6 on your phone. So as I said, we are very happy to have today a really remarkable moderator, Birju Pandya. Birju himself has been in the worlds of high finance and business and has been very much consciously cultivating leaders himself as he has done the work of deep cultivation. He's been a longtime service-based volunteer and is an incredible joy and gem to work with. So really excited to have you here, Birju.
Thanks so much for the opportunity to be part of this conversation today, Preeta, and thank you for engaging with us as the host today.
Great.
And just as a bit of context for our guest today, who I'm just very excited to be in dialogue with, today's guest has been experimenting with this question of bringing in personal practices, evolutionary practices, into the workplace for quite a while. He's been involved in his own practice for decades and is bringing it into the workplace now. Alfred Tolle, as Preeta had mentioned, has worn that hat of a senior business leader in technology, and he's held senior roles at Lycos and at Google, among other places. But he's simultaneously been developing this personal interior through 30-plus years of formal meditative practice, and he's now incubating a new form of organization that's geared to support the development of wisdom within the business sector. Alfred, we are so grateful that you are joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's a great opportunity. I'm grateful to be here and looking forward to a good conversation.
Now, where are you calling this from, just for all of our edification?
Well, I'm currently in Munich. It's a little bit after 6 p.m. in the evening, but we have a wonderful blue sky, and the spring is coming first time to this part of the world, so it's a very nice evening to have this conversation.
And how are you today?
I'm doing well. We have one of our conferences in front of us, so there is not really a weekend for us, I'm enjoying to have wonderful conversations, exchanging ideas with people and exploring ways of how we can make this event which is in front of us or multiple events as an experience for people to dive in and experience and explore their own connectiveness and interconnectiveness. And that's what we do. So, it's an exciting time currently.
So just since it's alive for you right now, maybe we can start there, and then what I'd love to do is kind of back into the journey that led there. But I'm curious if you can share a bit more about what these conferences are and what is alive for you in the preparation of them at this moment.
So last year I founded an association here in Germany called Wisdom Together. It's a non-profit association, we are trying to create and build an invitation. I call it like a field that we invite people to plant their plants there, coming onto this field and saying, look, we have an idea how to make this world a better place and how to transform business, society, and self in a substantial way. And so in order to do that and in order to show the people outside that there are so many multiple thousands of wonderful initiatives out there in this world. It's not only a conceptual idea or a philosophy, but it's already happening, this transformation. We wanted to create places where people come together and experience and hear about these wonderful events which are happening around the world, that they're going to discuss and explore whether this is something which they can realize in their own place, so that we create a network of local initiatives which are inspired by global conferences and connected via digital platforms and sharing experience and exchanging best practices. And that is more or less what we do. So the next conference will be in June, 13th and 14th of June here in Munich, and it's about intuition and creativity. And intuition, I came to this idea to bring intuition as one topic forward because I feel intuition is a deep inner connection with your inner soul and with yourself. And once you have that, then you understand that you are connected to every species, every living species in this world and maybe beyond, so that out of that a responsible action can happen. And and there are different, different opinions on intuition. There is this part where a scientist came up with intuition as a kind of unconscious understanding and experiences which happen throughout your life, and you can tap into that and then you can explore your new potential. I feel that this is true, but I think it goes beyond that. I think there is more than just your own experience. There is an experience which is happening in this world. You can tap into this field. And Erwin Laszlo, the founder of Club of Budapest, has described that very well with his book called Cosmic Creativity. And that means that your own creativity is tapping into a field which is connected by everybody, so you have access to that. And then creativity really happens. And so we will have people like that. We will have people discussing from the scientific world, but also entrepreneurs who have explored this intuition coming throughout their own practice, meditative practice, and nature experience practices. We will have artists there, and we will have not only speeches, but also room for experience and breakout sessions so that we can explore the way intuition can help everybody in his life to go forward and live a more responsible life. And that is in Munich. And in October, we will have a conference in Oslo, in Norway, which is called Consciousness in Business, Listen Closely, where we also invite people to listen to their inner voice, but also to the outer voice, because Norway is a country which is very nature-connected. So we will combine that with a trip to the to nature, and hopefully we can see and explore and experience the Northern Lights there. So we hope that we can do some meditation in nature as well. And then people like Otto Sharma will come as well to this conference, and will present Theory U. We will have Aravana Hayashi, who is doing social presenting theater, combining with mindfulness practices. So it's a kind of, you know, a blend of personal experience and scientific research, so that we can bring people together. And hopefully also not only bring them together and inspire them for one moment, the 2 or 3 days, but also that we can create a network of people who can initiate local groups so that they can start to transform in their personal environment and in their lives. That's what we do there.
So I'm just smiling big as you share this being what it is that's alive for you, knowing that, you know, in your past, you've been the CEO of Lycos, the famous search engine. And so I'd just love to zoom back out and talk about how this happened, you know, from the ground up. You mentioned intuition and creativity as a topic mm-hmm. that you'll be focusing on at this conference. And I'd love to have you reflect on your own upbringing and where were the seeds of your own intuition and creativity in your childhood that perhaps subconsciously planted the seeds for what would happen going forward?
Well, thank you for this wonderful question. I, you know, if I'm going back and into my childhood, I was brought up in a little village somewhere in the countryside of Germany, and my parents died when I was pretty young, so I was more or less alone with one person who took care of me, but she was not living with me. I was living more or less alone when I was 13, and when my father died, I experienced his death. I was with him when he died, and at that point of time, I had this kind of moment where you feel that everything what you have learned, every rule and every time and space is kind of relative, and it's not really important. Of course, there was a mourning, but there was also this kind of wow, this is a new space where I'm in, and I understood that when I'm reflecting back at that moment of time. I of course didn't have this kind of reflection, but that I feel was a moment which shifted my inner space from where I operated through my whole life. And at that time, then I started when I was very young, a commune, and I was always trying to make a better life for the environment. So I helped people in that little town. I had a flat. My parents left me a flat there, so when people didn't have a place to stay, they can stay with me. And so I had all this, but I felt this is normal. This is kind of, you know, this is the way people supposed to be with each other, help each other. So when you have something, then give it, and you know, you can share what you have, and it will come back. It was not a question. It was not shall I do that or not. It was just normal for me.
So if you were coming from this context, and my understanding of what that led to in terms of your interests, it seemed like you were interested in theater and East Asian studies in your college life, and somehow that turned into technology and business. And so how did the pendulum swing in that direction?
Yeah, so I think I was always interested in communicating with people, and once I was working for television, and when the internet came up, I immediately understood that the internet and technology is a way how to connect and communicate with people. And I was always interested in the, you know, intercultural exchange. So I was curious to see what people in other countries, how they live their lives. So I initiated once actually, I think at Google, when I was later at Google, we did a movie at a certain point of time, which is called 24 Hours, and that was something. I had this idea once when I was pretty young. I said, look, it's interesting to understand how a carpenter in Spain having breakfast and at the same time a carpenter in Japan or a carpenter in China or in America. Let's make a little video out of this to understand. And this was so much possible when technology and internet hit our daily life. So there was, and still is, a great potential on the one hand side. And then when I was working in this technology space, I recognized that it's also a big threat, and it could be. So it's not, nothing in life is, it's neither good nor bad, but it's like how you're going to use it. Mm. And that was told to me when I got a scholarship to Japan, and when I was studying theater, and I fall at that time into a Zen monastery, and because I saw people sitting in front of a wall for 4 or 5 hours, and I was like, wow, what a waste of time. what are these folks doing there? So I said, look, I have to experience that. So I went there, and I found a monastery and an abbot who gave me a good advice when I left Japan, and he said only one sentence. He said, there is no good or bad in this world. There is no right or wrong. And I was like, what does he mean by this? But that helped me also. That, you know, you always have these moments in your life, I feel.
Yeah, so I'm curious, as you were integrating this inner life into what turned into your early career, what was your inner life like during this time? You know, what I'm hearing you say is technology and business was interesting to the extent that it could connect people. So that's like an external view. And I'm curious what's happening inside of you, knowing that you have this Zen background and you're showing up to a corporate office every day.
Yeah, that's a very good question, and sometimes I was asking myself why I did that. But I, honestly speaking, I had every day in my life, it was a wonderful experience, and I was grateful that I had the opportunity to live and experience this moment with other people. So, give you an example, in Japan, I was once vice president for Bertelsmann there and responsible in Southeast Asia for internet and TV businesses. And so I came into this office, and it was a very international team there. Again, we had people from, actually Koreans from North Korea. They were working with me, which was kind of, for me, it was such an interesting experience, having people with that background. But also we had people from America, from Holland, from Spain, from England, and from Germany. So it was an international crowd, but also Japanese. A lot of Japanese, they were running the local businesses, and we were trying to help them in certain areas. And then since I was a kind of, in Japan, it's called chacho, it's a kind of boss kind of type, and they said, okay, you got to get a company car. So I got a company car, and I never showed up with a company car in the office. And then sometimes the Japanese came to me and said, Alfred, you are coming by train. Why do you do that? It's crowded, you have to. And I said, you know what? The train takes me 20 minutes to the office. The car takes me 1.5 hours to the office. Do you really think I should drive in a car? He said, yes, you should, because you are the boss. And I said, that's an interesting way how to perceive hierarchy. But again, this kind of little examples, and it was a wonderful conversation which came out of this, and I understood that it's a different kind of perception of how you do your life and how you make decisions of your life. And that was so interesting for me. Every time I come to the office, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was there an implicit movement towards simplicity that was a guidepost of that kind of a decision, or was it much more of a practical decision?
No, it was really simplicity, and it was like, why do we need this? You know, is that really something which the status idea, which was at that time still very prominent in Japan, and still to a certain extent it is. But I was trying to have these conversations and with my colleagues and with friends and with other, you know, CEOs in that region, that I said, do we need that? Is that really something? First of all, I don't think we need that, you know, for our status, because, and what is status at all? So and it was a broader conversation which came out of this little kind of, incident or how, whatever you want to call it, and which led to a broader understanding of different cultures and different ways, and also an acceptance of, do we really need all this kind of, you know, luxury around us? And if yes, why did we have to ask us why we need that? And
so,
I'd
love to jump in there if I may.
Mm-hmm, sure.
So what I'm hearing is just this beginning, this nascent movement towards integration, towards saying there's something inside of you that needs to be named outside of you, and and you happen to be in the business world. So you know, at what point, what was that journey of beginning that process of naming that, of saying, okay, I can't just be simple in my own life. I need to be simple at work, or I need to be meditative at work, or you know, pick your inner value that now needs to start to be integrated.
I think through meditation practices, that's in my case, I felt that I, at a certain point, I was able to take a different perspective. So to put myself out of myself or out of the situation where I was acting and looking at what I'm doing. And and then to really connect myself with my inner soul and having an understanding of, is that the right way to do it? So I wouldn't say per se you should live a complete simple life, because some people, you know, maybe have at their certain, you know, level where they are a reason why they do that. And I wouldn't judge it, but I would say, let's understand why we do the things we're doing, and let's reflect on this. And while reflecting on this, I think we're getting, and especially through meditative practices, which I experienced, that you're getting to an understanding what is really important in your life. So, for instance, I had a good theater teacher, and he came from Italy, and he was from Commedia dell'Arte. And he said to me once, Alfred, the stage is life, and life is the stage. So when I was on board in some companies, like, and I remember I had a I was on a board, and I had to present some numbers and shareholder meeting in a company in Korea. I was always, you know, looking at it as, okay, this is a game and a concept what we are playing. It's not really connected into your inner soul and into your inner life. So, and that understanding then again brought me to a lot of conversations with people. So, give you an example with Google. When I was at Google, they did a reorganization, a big one, which affected a lot of people. And then they brought the managers in a room together because they were supposed to, you know, execute that. And and they said, okay, we want to do this. And I said, and there were 50 people in the room. And I said, why? And they said, because we want to become a $100 billion company. And I said, why? that was the first question which irritated them. but and then I said, look, you know, you can tell me 100 billion, 200 billion, 1 trillion, 10 million, whatever the number is. It's just the one with a lot of zeros. But it's never really inspiring and it's not connected to us. Tell me what you want to do with that money and tell me where it makes sense for the contribution to our society and to others. And then I can tell you whether I'm inspired. And I think that is a way to see things which come through, you know, putting yourself in a different spot and looking at it and seeing, look, this might be only a stage and a game. And if that's a game, let's change it so that we can contribute to everybody. I recently held a speech here in Germany last week because currently through technology, a lot of people feel threatened and there is a lot of fear. And there is a lot of speeches from politicians and from others who are saying, who does our economy need in the future? Because they see that artificial intelligence and robots will probably take the position from a lot of people. And so people feel anxious and threatened. And I reframed this question. I said, this is the wrong question. What we need to ask us is, which economy do we need in the future? That puts the humans again in the center. And that means that technology is neither good or bad, but the question is how conscious can we deal with the technology, and are we the one which are creating the system and the environment in which we want to live? This is the way we do that. Yeah.
So I'm curious about this because my experience has been that these kinds of conversations are not easy to bring up in the business world. It's not easy to go to one's boss and say, well, you know, why did we want to hit our numbers this year? Or even more to the point, it's not easy to engage in practices of inner development in the workplace. And so how was that experience for you? Not just at the level of what was done, but what was your own inner journey of, you know, what does it feel like to have that kind of conversation? Were you sort of numb to it, or was it something that felt very vulnerable for you? What was the stumbling blocks? Where did you find resonance?
So it was not easy to do that because, as you said, you are in an environment where people are looking at the bottom line, at the numbers, and saying, okay, what does it mean for our business? And what kind of effect do you have? But I felt that in this world and also in the business area, you have a lot of people who understand and have this inner feeling of something is not right here. And if you use the right wording, you know, I don't think spirituality is the right word. That's why I used in Munich intuition and creativity and not spirituality and creativity. But if you use this wording and you connect that with scientific research and said, look, there's a lot of things done in this area, you can bring a lot of people to your side or at least open for the conversation. For me, it was... sometimes in the beginning it was hard, and I was also not, sometimes I didn't dare to do it, or I said, look, it's too hard to convince people. It's too hard. I was sitting there and I was like just shaking my head. I was exhausted sitting in meeting conferences, and I felt, this really takes the energy away from me, and it's we could do that in a much better way. But I learned that you sometimes need to be brave and just say, look, you know, what are we doing here? And why are we doing it? Shall we ask us this question first before we continue? And I make and by Google, for instance, what I did is I asked these folks in my apartment when I had conversations and meetings with others, executives Then I invented to start these meetings with a 1 minute or 2 minute pause before we started. And it took me a while to do that because I felt that they anyway don't want to do that. Why should I, you know? But then I felt it was so exhausting for everybody. And I spoke with with people one-to-one, and I said to them, look, don't you feel the same way? Don't you think we should try to start to do something else? And then the people said, yeah, do you have an idea? And I said, yeah, let's just make a minute or 2 minute pause before we start. And let's try to align our breaths with each other and try to leave the things which happened before out. And let's start fresh in this conversation. And then when we did that, some people said afterwards, wow, Alfred, we really had the experience that, it's fresher. But it takes some time, and sometimes you feel alone, but my experience is that you are, most of the cases, you are not alone. When you dare to do that, it's a question of how you frame it and how you mention it and how you approach people. But if you leave the door open and do it with love and not with, look how great I am or look how much experience I have, but just to say, look, here is love in this room, and, I understand and we understand each other on a deeper level, so let's try to connect on that level. And I think a lot of people are more and more, I feel, open for that. Some people not, and that's... or it takes longer.
But so here you were being able to actually find traction and find that courage within yourself. And yet, I see you here articulating this wisdom together concept that you're mentioning. So what led to your choice to exit the conventional business paradigm despite this ability to still find some traction, but maybe not to the level that you were looking for?
Well, when I was at Google, I decided to do that. I was responsible for marketing and sales for Scandinavia and Benelux. And I did that. Actually, it took me a long time to decide to go to Google. It was like I came back from Boston where I was working for Lycos, and then Google approached me and I said, shall I really do that again, this kind of treadmill? So I did a vision quest, and I went into the forest, and I experienced 4 or 5 days alone in the forest, and then reflecting on my inner journey there with the group. And the answer, so the question for me was, shall I go to Google or not? But the answer was more sophisticated. It came back to me to say, it really doesn't matter what you do. It's a question of your attitude. And then I said, okay, then I'm trying to use Google as a platform to make the world a better place a little bit. And so I accepted that offer. But I always had about 4, 5, 6 working groups working on different interesting things. I always said, look, I'm spending 60% of my time in marketing and sales, and the rest I'm doing meaningful stuff. So I worked with Otto Schammer, trying to bring an institute inside of Google, challenging the board on their own mission, don't be evil. So we wanted to convert that even into be good, but again, long story, long discussion. We brought GPOS mindfulness session into Dublin, the European headquarter with 3,500 people there. I did a lot of speeches there about this. We did a mindfulness conference there. I brought a Tibetan Buddhist teacher once a month into Dublin. And he was booked out immediately when people know that. So it was, I tried to use this platform, but at a certain point of time, I still had this split. I had to bring certain numbers, and Google was requesting 20% year-over-year growth, and which I was never comfortable with, not because of the 20%, but because of the why. shall we grow? And shouldn't we then ask ourselves, when we want to grow, what is meaningful growth? And do we need to grow then at all? What does it mean? So we had this conversation, and at a certain point of time, I felt, after four and a half years at Google, I felt like there was this inner calling. I don't know whether some of you guys might have experienced that as well. At a certain point of time, you are so sure you have to do that. And and I was, for me, it was, okay, I have to quit. I have to go out, and I have to do that. I have to build this Wisdom Together platform, and I have to try to find a way how to bring these wonderful initiatives to a place so that people become to know from each other, so that we have more impact while knowing from each other, while working towards a broader kind of understanding. And that's why I did it. And of course, I this feeling of that, because people came to me and said, Alfred, you're 53 and you will never find a job with free food like Google and with you know, the money you get, and you know, do you have you thought about your retirement and stuff? And of course I don't.
And you could have and you could have focused on this, you know, part time or on the side, but whatever was gnawing at you was just clear to focus full time, it seems like.
Yeah. I think a split is not probably, you cannot live with a split for a long time. I think psychology call it a psychological disconnection. And that sometimes happens when you are doing something where you are convinced that this is not the right way to do it. You can do that for a certain period of time. But if you do it too long, then you're either getting depressed or you're getting sick or you're getting, because your soul asked for something else. And if you hear that, then you have to do it.
So I want to ask about this soul piece, because so it sounds to me like, for as much as you were interested in supporting the journey of others as a guidepost for your next stage in life, it was as much about what your soul was calling for you. And so I'm curious if you were to reflect a bit more on that. You know, at this stage of life, what is it that you're looking to grow in that led you to exiting Google and being involved in this wisdom-related work?
Well, I came at a certain point of time to the understanding or to the belief that that we are able as humans. We are very powerful, actually. Because we can create the reality of our own life and of others' lives together if we understand that every thought, every decision, and every behavior we do is manifested and manifesting the reality outside. Once you understand that, you cannot make compromises anymore. Once you understand that that every thought in the morning when you're getting up and you're thinking a positive thought, this positive thought will be create, Nippon always said, it creates these ripples, and that's true. It creates the ripples, even though you might not see it. But just a thought, an emotion, a moment, a reflection, everything creates these ripples. And the stronger you be aware about your own kind of consciousness, your own inner voice and your soul, and the more you can create this connection, which is by default positive, by default happy, by default open and compassionate, if you understand that, then you create a different reality, you create a different world. And I felt that this path which I'm going right now brings me not only every moment of my life into this reflection by myself, but also together with so wonderful people who have the same kind of understanding, and together, even with the differences, the different culture, the different thought, the different behaviors, the different techniques they have, but brings us to the understanding that together we can really help this world to become a better place and create that. And and I think currently that's so strongly, I believe that we are living in times where where we decide right now, and I don't think this happened quite often, but how we're going to live as humans, in, or whether we're going to live as humans in 100 or 200 years from now on this planet, because I feel technology becomes so strong. And I don't know whether you guys have heard about the latest announcement from Elon Musk, where he said that he's going into biohacking and trying to create this kind of interface between technology, means a chip in your brain, or not. But that is, and I see that in a lot of areas. Here in Germany, close to Munich, there is a scientific center where they're working also on bringing the electromagnetic impulses between cells and between technology together and trying to connect them in a way. So that goes into the same direction, which means...
Yeah.
So once you do that, that means that you, first of all, focus on outside and no longer on inside. So, and I see that with a lot of people that they're saying, oh, technology will help us here. So it's not about us, it's about the technology which is in the outside world which we develop. So for me, I believe that we have so much potential in ourselves that we can create our own reality. And technology is a supporter. Technology can help us in a certain way, but technology is not the solution. The solution is our own consciousness and our own understanding of the world and how it functions. And and that means a deeper understanding, and not the cognitive, not the left brain ones. It's the right brain, which helps us to understand that.
So I do want to come back to this piece, Alfred, because I feel like there is a curiosity on how technology plays that kind of a role. That being said, I feel like the inner journey aspect is very curious to me, because it relates to making concrete changes that you can touch. Before I go into that, I just am receiving some feedback from audience members. Is it possible for you to just speak a little bit closer to the microphone?
Oh, yeah, sure. Sure.
Ah, that's
is that better
that's
now?
That's a huge difference. Thank you.
Okay, no problem.
So at one level, there is the work that you do in the world, and you mentioned Wisdom Together. You also mentioned that it is an association. And I find that word to be curious. I'm based in the USA. We talk about things like corporation or LLC. Can you share more about how you've structured what you're doing, both legally and financially, as you think about how to embody the kind of heart and spirit that you have in a way that actually makes a difference at the level of governance?
I try to find a structure which is close to the understanding that there is no or very few hierarchy, and there is an openness and an invitation to everybody to join. And here in Germany, we have—I think you have that in the States as well, but I'm not sure what legal concept that is. But here in Germany, you have this concept of an association, which means in the association, every member, everybody can become a member, and every member has the same rights. And there is an assembly once in a year, and in this assembly, everything will be decided, or not everything, but most of the things will be decided. So the framework, the direction, the strategy, what we want to do, and I also applied for the status of nonprofit here, which again gives you limitations on the one hand side, but on the other hand side, it shows you the clear dedication what we want to do. So the idea is to first of all, create a construct where everybody can become a member. Secondly, we are limited in the salary. So due to the nonprofit status, You can only have very low salaries. Currently, everybody is working for free anyway because we don't have any income yet. But we're intending to generate certain incomes, but not because we are focusing on making money. We are focusing on making impact. And when the result is also making money, my intention is to use that for building, for investing or supporting or helping other initiatives in this direction. So the idea is that people will be able to work in this environment without having without fearing that or thinking about how they can support their lives and their families and stuff like this on the one hand side, but on the other hand side, using the resources which we have, whether it is time, whether it is network, whether it is knowledge, whether it is money, whether it is whatever it comes, for increasing this movement and supporting whatever comes. And I have a different understanding on brand. A lot of people came to me and said, oh, you are creating a wonderful brand. And I said, no, I'm not creating a brand. A brand is, first of all, hurting. Can you imagine to put this hot steel in the flesh of a cow? That's where the name brand came from. And I don't think that's appropriate. And its status is ownership. And this is not what we want to do. We would like to have a name for something which invites others to come and create their projects and connect with each other to help other people in their transformation process, people and organizations. Mm. That's what we want to do. And that's why I choose this association.
I'm really intrigued by this, and it goes to your earlier point about naming this question of growth and why do we want to grow and are numbers the only way to grow. I'm curious how you think about this concept of growth now when there are so many good, quote-unquote, movements in business. I'm sure you've heard of things like conscious capitalism and what Whole Foods is leading, for instance, or benefit corporations in the U.S., which sounds somewhat akin to the associations that you're mentioning in Germany and Europe. You know, how do you feel about supporting businesses in continuing to grow beyond these frames that are legally possible now when so many others are still operating? I mean, they haven't even gotten to this stage, right? They're still at business as usual, profits and dollars come first, why do we care about anything else? Right, there's such a huge spectrum. So how are you thinking about bridging that?
Well, I think the bridge goes from every single person by him herself. It's like everybody probably knows this from Gandhi, you have to be the change you want to see in the world. And I think I'm not judging on people and saying you're doing something wrong or so, but what I feel is if you just question sometimes, then people feel irritated, which is a good momentum where you can learn on an emotional basis. So I'll give you an example yesterday, for instance, and I'm not sure whether I'm answering concretely your question now, but I'm jumping back afterwards. But yesterday or the day before yesterday, I don't know whether you guys have heard that the Americans have bombed the in Syria. So, and I saw our Chancellor Merkel and the President of France, Hollande, just a couple of hours after this attack from America, going on stage and saying, oh, yeah, we understand and support this because it was a horrible, horrible attack from Assad, and this needed to be punished. And I was speechless. Because my question to these people would be, why do you judge things from different angles and positions? I would ask our chancellor to say, we have created in our world an instrument and a procedure how to handle certain situations. And I'm 100% sure that, you know, these structures are not functioning really good right now. But you cannot, on the one hand side, say this is wrong if some countries which you don't like do that. And on the other hand side, jump on the side of a country, in this case America, and saying, you know, we understand that and we support that, even though they are breaking all international laws. And and that question, so what I'm often doing is not, you know, saying, oh, this is wrong or this is right. I'm just questioning. I'm just asking, how can you do that? Tell me. Tell me why. Maybe I don't understand the reason. Maybe there is a reason for this, but let me understand this. And I feel if you don't do this with the intention of blaming or people, then people feel, you know, kind of connected with themselves. Sometimes they just don't see this. And this is also in the business world. So if I'm going to businesses here in Germany or you know, in Scandinavia or Benelux or Japan or wherever I was working with them, and I ask them, look, you know, you guys know that we are currently using 50% more resources in the world that the world is able to regenerate. But you're still looking for 20-25%. Adobe is here in Germany looking for 35% year-over-year growth. So I'm asking them, why do you think this is necessary? And do you really think you contribute to the world, and in which way? And that is also what I see in this so-called shared economies and sometimes also conscious capitalism companies, that yes, they are open for understanding that they want to contribute, they want to help also. But I think you cannot just put that in the corporate social responsibility or corporate social department. You need to have a more holistic view on this.
So I want to ask you a question about this, Alfred. So if the modern social scientists are to be believed, they're putting together corporate structures with human psychology. So as you know, at least in America, corporations are treated as people. And one of the key researchers on this topic has said that may be fine, but if a corporation was a person, the bylaws, the structural responsibilities that are inherent with being a corporation, no matter how good you want to be within the corporation, but the corporation itself is bound to structures and rules that if the corporation were a person, that would be a sociopathic or a pathological person. So I'm curious how you think about that, that no matter how good the people in the company want to be, how does being a part of a corporation limit the capacity of what the inherent goodness is that can come out?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Oh, I really have this experience that I was with companies, and I spoke with a lot of people who are doing mindfulness sessions and meditation sessions and so, but still these companies, last year I was at an investment bank in New York, Tokyo Investment Bank, and very, very good people there doing meditation sessions. But still this company is investing into nuclear power plants, is investing into stuff, you know, and trying to grow in areas where obviously, you know, due to their investments and due to their engagement, you see that that they are manifesting the destruction of our planet. And I was, how can
despite
you live with that?
Despite the wisdom practices.
Yes, despite that, yeah. So because sometimes I felt that there is a systemic energy inside of companies and organizations, and it's very hard for single people, if you don't have a certain number of people and create a certain momentum, to change this systemic energy and systemic way how they think, how things has to go, and that is why a lot of people, I felt when they do go intensively inside of themselves, that they then a lot of people quit then and do something else. And I see this tendency more and more. So I see when I'm speaking to young, I have a lot to do with young people right now, that just at university level or when they're leaving universities. And I'm discussing this topic with them, and they feel that they say, we don't want to start in such a corporation anymore. We want to create something new. We want to create something completely different. And different means, let us really think about whether we need this kind of growth expectation, whether we need this kind of structures, these kind of structures which, you know, very hierarchical and so on. So, and there are a lot of these companies right now which I see, which is trying to, or young companies, trying to establish something else, something new, not focusing on making money, but focusing on contribution, but still then making money with it, but not, the focus is not there. The focus is something else. The focus is really, how can I help? What is meaningful? And I think I had a lot of this conversation with Chit-Meng Tung, the guy from Google who wrote this book, Search Inside Yourself. He said, look, Alfred, we are establishing, by bringing mindfulness practices into companies, a Trojanic horse. And I said to him, yes, but only when you hit a certain number of people so that the momentum is big enough that you can change this energy which is in this company.
Mm-hmm.
And if I might, I give you one example from Google again. We had once in a while we brought our CEOs and companies working with Google to Mountain View. And we had an extensive program in Stanford and Singularity University, and also with Astro Teller from Google X, the organization inside of Google where this moonshot idea is coming out of.
Right.
And he was telling a story. Last time I was there, he told a story and said, look, we have an energy wheel which we are shooting up in the stratosphere, and it's connected to the ground, and through the Hilo wind, it's actually creating more energy than it needs to bring it up there and keep it up there. So the people were excited, and they were clapping into their hands, and they said, wonderful, and they said, why are you Google do that? Because you don't make any money with it. And then Astro said, because Google wants to make the world a better place. So I grabbed Astro afterwards, and I said to him, Astro, I have one question for you, which I don't understand. So I'm in the sales department, and we are requested to bring 20% year-over-year growth back. And how we do that is that we are pushing companies into producing more products, not asking ourselves whether this is meaningful in a broader sense to the world and to the society. But just because 20% year-over-year growth is required for a listed company at the stock exchange. So we are pushing people to consume more energy, not asking ourselves whether this is meaningful. And you, on the other side, inside the same company, are producing a product which is obviously trying to solve the energy problem. So do you think that makes sense? Or shouldn't we see that from a more holistic perspective? That if we really mean it to make the world a better place, then don't let the split go inside the company. Let's try to find out how we really can do that. And that is, I think, what we need to ask, this systemic view of what we do has an effect wherever it goes broader and beyond our own kind of environment and beyond our companies. But if we understand that, and it goes straight again to yourself, to your inner connection to yourself, that you honestly say to you, does this make sense? And if you have enough people inside a corporation to do that, then you can change. I'm 100% convinced that if companies like Google, for instance, would spend one day in a week or half a day in a week on the topic, what can we really do to make the world a better place? And how can we solve this kind of, you know, framework where we are operating in and change that? Because everything is a concept. How can we change this concept? How can we do that? Then we would have had the chance already, and we would have probably certain answers and certain, you know, ideas. And I see that this is happening currently, and that is why it's so exciting to be at this moment of time in this position to meet so many amazing people like you guys, and I'll be grateful that I can be from service and help a little bit here and there to make that more, you know, communicate what you're doing to the world and to others.
Awesome. Birju, before you ask your next question, I just want to remind our callers that we're at the top of the hour. So if you have any reflections you wish to share or any questions you wish to ask of our speaker, you can dial *6, or you can send an email to ask@servicebase.org, or also via your live web, you can enter a question or comment. So look forward to any reflections, comments, questions that may come through. Meanwhile, back to you, Birju.
Thanks so much for guiding that part of the process, Preetha. And Alfred, just for your benefit, so we'll kind of go back and forth now where I may ask some questions further, but the audience is now invited to participate as well. I hope that's okay.
Sure. Wonderful. Thank you.
So if I only had one more question, what is most alive for me to ask you right now is how you have grown on an internal level because of walking this path, the path of developing your own personal interior through workplace dynamics. You know, how are you different now because of it?
I feel that I gained more freedom in my life and more peace in myself. And that's through my meditation practices on the one hand side, but on the other hand side, if you are inside a structure, a corporation, or an organization, you are sometimes have or established by yourself these blind spots where you think certain procedures have to be that way and not asking yourself why. It's sometimes hard if you do your reflection, you're very disciplined and you do your kind of meditation practices. But I feel from the outside, it's for me that I'm really feel that I'm more free to do things, and I'm not, you know, connected and bounded to certain systems and structures and procedures. And that is, again, what you mentioned, and that's the same here in Europe, I think. We consider corporations as well as persons. That I feel a corporation is not a person. A corporation is a concept which we once established for a certain purpose. Mm. And we as humans are always free and able to change that. But we have to remind ourselves and we have to understand that we are powerful enough to do that. We can't do that.
So I'm going to exercise the host prerogative here and ask a couple questions, if that's okay with you, Alfred.
Sure.
Just picking up on that last point, and this goes to kind of a more overarching question I'll move into, but initially, this idea of you say people can change, this notion that corporations are people. Mm-hmm. I guess the question I have for you are those going to be people within corporations that bring about that change or people from the outside? And where do you, I mean, mm-hmm. I'm curious because, you know, in your own life, now you've made the shift away from the corporate world and setting up this nonprofit. And you know, and I want to come back to that too also, you have the conferences, your setup, and the audiences. But I'm just curious about what, you know, as you talk about Otto Scharmer, Theory U, kind of, who is the audience for that kind of transformation that you think is ripe for helping to bring some of that about?
So, I think first of all, I think everybody is able to do transformation process for him, herself, and also for his or her environment. But what I would like, and that's the with our conferences, our you know a target group is the wrong word for it, but the people we are. We work together with, we call it leaders, but leaders are not necessarily leaders in terms of having a position as a leader. Leaders are people who are open, who are curious, and who are could be models or are already models for others. That could be teachers, that could be people who are in organizations, who are leading teams. That could be, but that could be also, and I don't know whether you everybody probably have experienced people coming into a room and you feel, wow, this person is, in some way he is bringing a different energy into this room. And these people, we are trying to bring together to understand what that means and what this responsibility and means for bringing compassion and empathy into the world for others, to use their services and their understanding and their reflection and their, I would say, also privileges in certain ways, to help others and bring that energy back to the whole species. And that's why outside or inside of corporations or organizations, I think it could be both. However, I feel that currently we are at a stage that I think it needs a broad movement outside of an organization, working together with certain people and groups inside of organization, but I think the initiation comes from outside. And that's, I'm not sure whether I'm right or not, but that's the feeling I have. And I felt in a little bit, you know, in the 60s, 70s, we had the student revolution, which, you know, you can have different opinions on that, but what they achieved was that certain really in the education area, certain very conservative structures were broken up at that point of time, and that was this kind of impulse for a new way of education, schools and universities and stuff. And I think at that time that was also needed from outside and not from inside. It was not possible to do that from inside, even though a lot of people from inside picked that up and then it became a movement. So,
yeah, just to follow up on that, I mean, I think when I think of, you know, like how broad social movements or broad social or broad change movements have come about, they've often come from very hyper-local situations that, you know, weren't necessarily individuals or situations one could pick from the outside as you know, to be part of a conversation, for example. So I'm thinking just like the U.S. Civil Rights Movement, you know, you had Rosa Parks sitting down at the front of the bus. You had Dr. Martin Luther King, who was a brand new pastor in this small church in Alabama. I think at the time that a lot of these activities would have happened, neither one of those individuals would have been at the top of anyone's list to have a conversation.
Yeah.
And so I guess this, you know, so I'm curious as to the way you've structured Wisdom Together. You talk about, you said you have a set of conferences and you'll have kind of local groups and then kind of networks and connections among the groups. And you know, I'm curious because it sounds a little bit like a top-down structure where you're going to have these kind of gatherings and then go local and then connect the local, you know, and I'm just curious about that structure versus just really letting kind of or supporting the local emerge organically.
Yeah, but maybe I described it in the wrong way. But this is exactly what we are trying to do, to support what is already happening, what is emerging already. What we see, though, is that there is so many things happening, but these folks don't know from each other. And what we're trying to do is offering and building places of connection. And that could be conferences where we're creating places and said, look, you know, everybody is invited to come and bring his, her own ideas and projects and emotions and experience to that. And out of that, out of this accumulation, then something new will emerge. So we don't know what comes out of it, but we're trying to build a kind of safe space or a space where we offer people to come together. And that could be person to person, but it could also be on the internet, of course. And it's not that we are saying, look, these are the people you need to see, or these are the content which is important to know. But we just offer the place and the association. When I'm asking people to join, I'm always saying this is an association, which means I'm not the one who tells you what I think is the right thing to do, but I'm expecting from everybody of these members to come and bring his or her own ideas in. And then we discuss and said, hey, how can we bring all these ideas, you know, to a broader audience, and not to say this is what we need to do, but more or less to inspire them to bring their ideas in as well. And out of mm-hmm. that, the movement comes, and out of that, new things emerge. I don't know what really should be the concept and the world in the future, but I know that here and there, I have an idea, my friends and people who have an idea, and they necessarily doesn't need to be also member of Wisdom Together. They could also become partners. And I think Service Space is a partner as well in terms of, you know, we would support everything what you guys were doing because I think we have the same intention. So if we have the ability to support you in a way and it makes sense, then we would do that and vice versa. So it's not about saying Wisdom Together knows the way. It's more about Wisdom Together tries to create places and ask other organizations and people to come in, create also places, and then all these places together, connected to each other, will become a movement, and this movement has the power to change.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So I'm going to go to a caller in our queue right now.
Mm-hmm. Hi, this is Aria in Half Moon Bay, California. Thank you, Alfred, and thank you, Birju, and thank you, Preeta, for a fascinating conversation. So there's this sort of inherent paradox that I heard stated in several ways. Alfred, you were talking about in Google how the main company is really in the business of stimulating the use of more energy, and yet there's this one little piece that's trying to create a world where less energy is needed. And Birju, you were really articulating the concept of a corporation as a person but not a person, and how do you do good within the bylaws of what people in the corporation are supposed to do. Alfred, I'm thinking about the question you asked at that point in your story, what can we really do to make the world a better place? So my question for you is there a corporation that you're aware of, a large corporation, where the corporation, the people, or the, you know, the majority of the corporation itself is aligned with this and doing this in their business? Or is that impossible, and is it always going to be just a group of people inside a corporation who are aligned with that value?
Well, it's a very good question, and it's also a very hard question. Thank you for asking that. because we have established a world and a financial system which gives you really only few places or ecological niches to try something else. But there are some corporations, which I'm aware of, who are trying to do something else and go into a different direction. And so even though they are still bonded in certain areas, like, you know, the company of Eileen Fisher, for instance, it's in America, this fashion, a women fashion company. Eileen is trying in the fashion area really to transform it into a way which is not only recyclable but compostable products. That and that's from the product side and from the structure side, to convert her company into something where everybody has a part who is working on this in this company, and also not really focusing on the money piece, but focusing on creating value for the society. What which means that they have departments who are thinking about what does it mean to produce new products, new fashion. How do we deal with the leftovers which we cannot sell? And they developed a machine which put the ribbons out of the clothes and to give it back to students so that they can use it again. So there are a lot of these initiatives, but is there a perfect company out there? I'm not sure, but I see that there are a lot of directions. Like, you're in California, and in Auckland, I think Birju is involved in that. Is Michelle Jong established this Bali Business Alliance of Local Living Economies, for instance, who are trying also to find a way how to do and build an environment of business which is not growth-oriented, which is not competitive-oriented, which is collaborative-oriented and sustainable and connected with the environment. There is a company here in Spain, in northern Spain, called Mondragon, who was built in the 50s with one aspect of creating jobs for people, and they never fired people. And when Otto was there and asked them why, what did you do in the crisis, they said, we either paid the people through or we shifted them if that was possible in other areas. But our direction is we never fire people, which means they were not focusing on margin and shareholder value and growth per se. They were focusing on giving people a jobs there in that area. So I see here and there and here and there. There are locally different, but there are some initiatives, also quite big. You know, the Mondragon is the seventh biggest company in Spain, with, I think, 70,000 people or so. So there are initiatives, and I see a lot of communities currently building around, you know, certain beliefs, like Rudolf Steiner, their anthroposophical societies are building something in Sweden. They did something in Austria. So I see that there is something happening. But again, I feel that we have created for some time, I wouldn't say a long time, but for some time we have created a system which is quite strong, actually. And I think what is needed is to connect all these wonderful initiatives in a way that we can create an alternative for young people so that they don't have to say we have to go to whatever, Goldman Sachs or somewhere else to make money in order then afterwards to do something good. I think the connection and collaboration, we are entering into this time of collaboration, and that is so important. But thank you for that question.
Do you think that in order for there to be corporations which really are aligned with making the world a better place, that there would be some kind of change needed in the legal structure of what is a corporation?
I believe that there will be what is needed is a change in the mindset of the financial structure.
The financial structure,
Yeah. And that is supported by the legal structure. So I personally don't believe that it makes sense, for instance, to have to have a companies and I call them companies like FET, for instance, the Federal Stock Exchange, or in Europe, you have the central bank here in Europe, or they have the World Bank, which is a private entity. And presidents like I think John F. Kennedy in the States, also I think Nixon at a certain point of time wanted to bring it back under the regulation of the state. Very hard for them to do that. Impossible, nearly. And we saw in 2008 when we had this big crisis, we saw that. The result, it would be a long discussion, but I personally believe that, you know, this financial structure which we have created in this world, and the focus on money and building our value system based on how much people have and what they are worth, and is really the reason why we are not free enough to establish something else, which is originally the thing what we are supposed to do. Because money shouldn't be the goal, or should it? What do you think?
Thank you.
Yeah,
I love the inquiry as we head towards our final time here together on this call. I'm curious, Alfred, as you think about your own next stage of growth, not just at the level of what you're doing in the world, but you know, the qualities that you're looking to develop into yourself at this next stage. Can you share more about what is alive for you in your own inner development?
So what I try to do is to be really discipline is also a bad word, but because it means that it's no fun. But it's actually, to be disciplined is sometimes fun. So to have to take my time in the morning to do my meditation practice, to look at what I'm doing for my body as well, what is my eating practice as well as doing some yoga and doing some tai chi, and more towards tai chi than yoga, but doing something for your body as well. And integrating that into your life, and while doing so, and growing your inner soul and your connection to your inner soul, I saw that what's happening is that it will have an effect on the growth of the outside, but it's often distracted, and I'm often not in that way disciplined enough that I'm saying, okay, I have to do this and this and this and this, so I have to do so many things. And then when I'm getting back, I said, oh, no, you should have taken your time. You know, nothing is more important than looking into yourself and seeing always a reflection. I think Joe Dispenza, I don't know whether you guys heard about him. He's an American chap, but became very popular here in Europe. He's a biochemist, and he is also doing meditation practice. And he once said, I never do something when I'm not really connected with myself and others. So I'm trying to sit down, and sometimes it takes half an hour, sometimes it takes 2 hours. But if I'm sitting and if I'm standing up, and then I know now I'm ready to go. And I would like to come to that place to have this inner connection every time and every moment, and this sensitivity. That would be a nice next step of evolution of myself. And hopefully that will also help me to be from even more service to the outside world and to others.
Mm. Thank you so much, Alfred.
All right. Well, Alfred, thank you so much for this beautiful conversation. I'm so taken by the fact that you've had such impact in the world of big corporations, but yet you ultimately remained very grounded in your personal practices, as your last response suggests. It's really beautiful to hear. The last final question we have for you is, how can we, as the larger service-based community, support your work?
Well, you know, that we working together on you know, I would love to, you know, be more connected and becoming to know more what you guys are doing, and let's find a way how we can also you know, because you're doing so wonderful work, which is happening around in a lot of countries with service space. And how can we be from service there, and how can we offer that, like Karma Kitchen, for instance, this concept? How can we do that, and how can you offer that to the young community, which is happening here with Wisdom Together, and said, look, here is our partner service space, and let's do something together here, and let's, because Wisdom Together, I choose the word together for purpose, it's like together. So let's try to find out what we can do together, and also if you would communicate what we are doing this year in Munich, in Oslo, and in Sarajevo, would be wonderful and helpful. Mm. More and more people become to know what we are doing, and likewise.
Awesome. Well, apropos of that, we just got a live web comment as you were speaking saying, thank you for your wisdom this afternoon. I will most likely become a member of Wisdom Together. So.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, yeah. Well, thank you, Alfred. Thank you so much for your wisdom and our Wisdom Together time. And we always like to end our conversations with a moment of silence. So with that,
okay.
Go into silence now. All right. Thank you again. Thank you, Alfred, on behalf of Birju, myself, and the entire Service Space team. Thank you for your great work in the world.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for your great work in the world. I really, when I heard about Service Space, that was actually one of the inspiring moments which brought me also to make Wisdom Together happening. So thank you for being in this world, and let's do a lot of things together. It's a time, the time asked us and Mother Earth asked us for working together. Thank you.
So grateful, Alfred.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening to a recording of Awaken Calls. To access archives, visit us at www.awaken.org. And to get more involved, volunteer at www.servicespace.org.